NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay is going to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising. We're going to talk about that on the first part of today's program. Later on, we'll open up the phone lines. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we talked about the possibility that the U.S. was going to go to war with Iran. Here's what two listeners had to say.
Yes, concerning Iran, I think that Trump, because he is so ignorant, believes that the people of Iran are also uninformed. And I also feel that Bolton is a warmonger and is in love with power and is a bully. And those are my humble opinions.
Hi, Rob. This is Dave in Tampa commenting on your morning show. There was a lot of discussion of war with Iran, and the point I wanted to make is that, you know, the internet has disrupted or transformed a lot of different aspects of our world. You know, journalism, you know, taxi cabs, online shopping, so many things have been transformed. War is one of them. The 21st century war means cyber war, and Iran has a very robust capacity to bring that kind of war home to the United States. So anybody who thinks that the old model of war, where we go somewhere and kick butt and everything stays normal at home, I think we're in for a rude awakening on this one. I think Iran is more than capable of turning off our lights, sabotaging our infrastructure, and doing things via cyber warfare that also changed the equation on wartime presidents, because when it comes home and makes your life miserable at home, it's no longer such a great thing to be a wartime president, especially a war that's controversial in the first place. That's my comment. I hope people will tell their congressmen, their senators, no war with Iran.
Well, there you have a couple of listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to talk with the president of the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay in just a moment. This June marks the 50th anniversary of what some people call the Stonewall Riots or the Stonewall Uprising. It was a time when gay and lesbian and other people fought back against police oppression in the city of New York. The city police had just raided a gay bar on Christopher Street. We're going to hear from an eyewitness to the Stonewall Uprising right now. He is Mark Siegel, a longtime journalist. He was there 50 years ago in June of 1969, and this is what he saw.
I got into New York 6 weeks before. I was an 18-year-old kid just out of high school, and I did what any gay kid at that time did, moved to the big city, because that's the only place that we thought the gay people were. They didn't exist. We were invisible. There were no cable stations then. There was no internet. So if you wanted to find out about gay people, you went to your library, and most likely they didn't have anything. But you knew that going to the big city, you'd find gay people. And in New York, the place you went was Christopher Street, and that's where the Stonewall was. And so for 6 weeks, I'd walk up and down Christopher Street, pop into the bars occasionally. One of them was the Stonewall. And on that night, I happened to be in the bar. The lights flashed on. Police came in. And the first thing the police do is they harassed the queens or the effeminate people or stereotypical people. They harassed and blackmailed the people who looked like they were businessmen. And people looked like me, who had just been in New York for 6 weeks, who looked like the boy next door. They caught it and let out. They had no use for people like me. And what happened was, the reality is, I'll say something that no other person in Stonewall will say. I was a coward. I was thrilled to be carted and let out of the bar. But what I did do is stand across the street and watch everything that happened. And as it began to unfold, they would let people come out of the bar slowly and surely. But that began to become a semicircle around the front door of gay people. And eventually, inside the bar were just the police and a couple of patrons. And all of a sudden, people started throwing things at the door. The anger of 2,000 years of oppression.
But why this night? Why did this night make it cause that spark when it hadn't happened before in New York City?
Well, it's not New York City, and it's not San Francisco, it's not Los Angeles. It's the fact that it was the counterculture year of 1969. At that point in time, you had Black Civil Rights Movement, the Women's Rights Movement, rights for Latinos. And what I said, looking at this scene across the street from me, was, what about us? What about our rights? And that's the first time, being a kid from Philadelphia, no money in my pocket, no place to live, not a job, thinking I had no prospects in the entire world, I said to myself, even though there weren't the words for it, I said, this is what I'm going to dedicate my life to. I'm a gay activist. Yeah. And so what happened from Stonewall, there's a little aspect of our history that's missing, which is that people don't realize that from the ashes of Stonewall was built the Gay Liberation Front. That became an organization which did two important things, the most two important things that have ever been done in the LGBT community and history. We first decided to do one thing that was revolutionary. We were going to define ourselves rather than be defined by society. Because up until that point, the only thing you knew about gay people were what you heard in church. We were immoral. What you heard by the police departments, we were illegal. What you heard from psychiatry, we were mentally ill. You know, we couldn't be employed by government. We were totally invisible. We decided to define ourselves and who we were as men and women. The second thing we did that had never been done before is Gay Liberation Front created what we now call the LGBT community. In 1 year of GLF, we created the first gay youth organization, which took care of bullying and other issues and suicide of gay young children. We created the first trans organization. We created the first mental health alerts and medical alerts. We created the first gay community center. If all of that were not enough, in the end of that first year to celebrate it, along with Craig Rodwell, we helped create the first gay pride parade.
But now, it sounds like all that would have happened even if Stonewall had not happened, right?
No. Stonewall was the spark that led. After Stonewall, we had 4 days of demonstrations or speeches, basically, outside that building. And a number of people who had been meeting elsewhere in New York over little issues, on their issues, lesbian separatists over here, feminine men over here, masculine men over there, and they were meeting in their own little groups trying to define themselves. But what Stonewall did was unite all these groups for the first time, and we united and created Gay Liberation Front. So the significance of Gay Liberation Front is that up until 1969, you got to remember that the gay rights struggle in America started literally in 1925 in Chicago by a man by the name of Henry Gerber. So until 1925, 1969, and that first year, only 100 out people in the nation. That's it, 100 people. So on that first Gay Pride Day, we had 15,000.
Mark Siegel, a journalist who at the age of 18 had just moved to New York from Philadelphia. He was an eyewitness to the events at Stonewall on Christopher Street in New York City, June 28, 50 years ago. And we're going to talk about a new choral work that celebrates the Stonewall riots. Bill Knuth is the president of the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay. And Bill, nice to see you. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me today.
So this weekend, there will be the premiere, the local premiere of a new choral work honoring the Stonewall riots, which were so transformative.
This is a Southeastern premiere of Quiet No More. It was co-commissioned by both the New York City Gay Men's Chorus and Los Angeles Gay Men's Chorus. It's the largest undertaking by any gay and lesbian choruses. It's really celebrating what did happen at Stonewall. Stonewall is the pivotal point in the gay community. It's when we actually started to push back. At Stonewall, if you wore a garment that wasn't a man or a woman's, they would actually harass you. The police routinely attacked people as they were leaving the bar. You couldn't call the police for protection if you were gay because they were part of the problem. They were assaulting the gay and lesbian community.
Now, you went to school in New York City.
I went to school in New York City, yes, sir.
Are you old enough to have been down there on Christopher Street?
No, I didn't arrive in New York City until the mid-70s.
Yeah.
But I was at the 10th anniversary of Stonewall, the Gay Pride March in 1979, and I was able to hear two of the original Stonewall Riot members speak. And it was very impassioned because in 79, that was also when Dan White just got off with the Twinkie thing for killing Harvey Milk. So the entirety of New York was in an uproar again because it showed that the political and judicial system still let people off easy for killing, not even just assaulting, gay members.
Yeah, he committed those assassinations in San Francisco.
So it was a very impassioned gay pride for the 10th anniversary of Stonewall. And it was very noticeable, the increase of police showing up because they thought potentially another riot was going to take place.
Mm-hmm. Back then, it's hard to imagine, but you said that if you didn't wear clothes that were appropriate to your gender, that you could be arrested.
That's correct. And that's one of the reasons the police went and went into these bars. And based on the choral piece, they actually took you into the restrooms. And if you didn't look like you were the gender that you were wearing clothing for, they would strip search you and sometimes quite brutally with your genitalia and things. It was very horrible what the police did.
That's outrageous.
And that's why the Stonewall riots had to take place. The community was over it. They were tired of the continual harassment. They couldn't even go out and have a cocktail, dance, enjoy themselves, and be with the people they loved. You add to this that in 69, there wasn't air conditioning. There was a heat wave in New York City. Marilyn Monroe had just passed, one of the drag queen's favorite people. And all this escalated with being brutalized by the police that night in 90-degree weather with no air-conditioned bars. And they just had it. And they finally pushed back. One of the pieces which gets very chaotic that we sing in this arrangement is fight back, throwing things, getting hurt. And it's just, it becomes the way it's set up in music. It becomes the chaos of the crowd just like enraged by this. And it's very appropriate for what really took place.
How long has the Tampa Gay Men's Chorus been in existence?
16 years now.
Yeah. And so how big is the chorus?
We have currently about 40 members. We also have additional board members and things who aren't singers, but who help us do what we need to do.
And so the local premiere, the Southeast premiere, is happening right here in the Tampa Bay area.
That's
in St.
Correct.
Pete and Tampa. Tell us where the premiere is going to be this weekend.
Tomorrow it will take place at 8 o'clock at MCC King of Peace over in St. Pete at 3150 Fifth Avenue North. And on Saturday at 8 o'clock at the Portico downtown at 1001 North Florida Avenue. Phenomenal acoustics in the Portico. And we're so proud to have these pieces, and tickets are selling rapidly, so we're glad that the community is really supportive of this.
What's the website for more information for the Tampa Bay Gay Men's Chorus?
We're just our abbreviation, gmctb.org.
Okay. Let's listen to a little bit. Let's listen to a little bit of the rehearsal of Quiet No More, the local rehearsal for the Tampa Bay Gay Men's Chorus. And this is a rough edit, but let's just listen to, because I think people will get a sense of just how wonderful this music is. You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is the Tampa Bay Gay Men's Chorus.
Three. Three and
All right, well, that was the rehearsal of the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay for their upcoming performance of Quiet No More, which marks the impact of the Stonewall riots on the GLBTQ community and movement. And with us right now is Bill Knuth, who's president of the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay. I think that sounded wonderful. That was obviously a rehearsal, and that sounded great.
Thank you. We have polished it much more, for our performance. And that's just the introduction to it. That's the first movement of this piece. It's a seven-movement piece that we're performing. And the first half of it is actually what took place at Stonewall, the build-up to it and the riots. And the first couple movements are, there were limited places to go. Most of them were mafia-owned at the time because the mafia were the only ones that could pay off enough police to keep these establishments open.
And then the mafia could make big money from the GLBTQ community.
The mafia, even when I was living in New York in college days in the late 70s, was making a lot of money off the gay community. But it was a hand and fist sort of thing where we needed the mafia to protect us from the police and to pay them off. But they also made our money off of us. So
this summer marks the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising. What do you think? It changed things so dramatically. It began to give voice to people that were undercover and voiceless for so many years. How important was it to you as a young person?
The rippling effects of Stonewall were astounding because it was the pivotal point in the gay movement. We suddenly realized we have to be out there. We have to be vocal. We can't put up with discrimination. We can't put up with assaults and brutalizing us. And we can't put up with a police force or political system that really oppressed us. This went on even further to HIV when we had a president who wouldn't say the words. We had no funding. So that sparked even the movement to help our members in the community who were positive and who were suffering from illnesses. But it also pushed us forward to the point we are today where we can get married. And in 69, I think no one ever imagined a day when we could actually marry our partners and be a loving couple, adopting or having children.
How did you get involved with the chorus?
I have been a gay activist, and I have been on the board of many organizations, and the chorus, I love singing. I sang in college. I was in our elite glee club. I got so involved with work and business and activism that I didn't have the time to do that. And finally, I had time opening up now that I'm older. And I just enjoy being able to sing again and being part of this organization.
So again, the local premiere, the Southeast premiere of Quiet No More, is this weekend at the King of Peace Metropolitan Community Church. That's on Friday night, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And then Saturday night, it's at 8 p.m. at the Portico, which is right in the heart of downtown Tampa, the north part of downtown Tampa, just off Florida Avenue, right?
And a beautiful acoustics in this establishment. So we are really glad to have this as a place to perform because you can hear everything.
The Gay Men's Chorus movement, it's all over the country. It's amazing. Whatever major city you go to, there's always a great chorus there, a Gay Men's Chorus.
And again, we started as part of that social political movement that was sparked by Stonewall. The first performance ever by any Gay Men's Chorus was at Harvey Milk's funeral and rally. The Gay Men's Chorus of San Francisco performed live in public for the first time in 1978. And so the Gay Men's Chorus has been part of this movement that we, through song, and that's part of our mission statement, that through song we celebrate the inherent dignity of all people. And this is what the Gay Men's Choruses are about. The gay choruses are about.
How many concerts would you say you put on a year?
We put on four concerts. Well, three concerts and our fun event, which we call the Cabaret, which we highlight some of our soloists. It's more fun and campy. It's 21 and over, so we can just be a little bit more wild.
Mm-hmm. When does that usually take place?
That is the winter concert, mm-hmm. Usually January, February, or March.
All right. And the other concert or the other?
The other concerts are in October, mm-hmm. Our holiday concerts in December, and our spring concerts in May.
So this is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. How big do you think it? I mean, we've got the Pride Fest coming up this summer. How big do you think that the Pride Fest in St. Pete coming up this summer, how big do you think this is going to be this year?
It will impact, increase it for some of us who will remember Stonewall. But one of the things I've discovered by performing this piece is that younger members of the GLBT community haven't really heard much about Stonewall in our history. They just take for granted some of the things that we now have as civil rights, our ability to rent a house, not be terminated from our jobs because we're gay. So I think a lot of the younger people, it might be an education rather than a movement. We're hoping to get the word out so they understand the history of the gay community, because in education, they have black civil rights, they have women's suffrage, but they don't really talk about yet the gay civil rights movement and Stonewall and some of the events that have taken place.
Because a lot of work and a lot of people put their lives on the line to get this far.
A lot of people were arrested, lost jobs, lost houses. Many people worked diligently to get where we are today.
Well, Bill Knuf, president of the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay, thanks for coming by. Again, remind us where the premiere of Quiet No More to honor the Stonewall Uprising in June of 1969, where will the performances be?
Tomorrow night we'll be performing at MCC King of Peace at 8 p.m. It's located at 3150 Fifth Avenue North, St. Petersburg. And Saturday, on the 11th, we'll be performing at the Portico, 1001 North Florida Avenue in Tampa, downtown.
And what's the website for the chorus?
It's gmctb.org.
Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Bill Knuf, thank you very much. President of the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay, thanks for coming by. And
thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here. We're going to go out with some punk music, but this is also by a gay man. This is Tom Robinson doing Long Hot Summer. It's his song about Stonewall. This is WMNF. 88.5 FM. Tom Robinson Band from 1978, Long Hot Summer, his song about Stonewall. And you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa. And we're going to open up the phone lines in just a moment, take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. So if there's something in the news that you want to bring up, we will talk about it. I want to remind you, too, that on the Midpoint program coming at noon today, Lynn and Shelley will be hosting Drew Smith, the genealogy librarian at USF, to discuss the recent impact of using our relatives' DNA to identify suspects in cold cases of violent crimes and to put a name to long unidentified bodily remains. Genetic genealogy is here to stay. Should we be glad or should we be scared? Lynn and Shelley will be talking about that today at Midpoint on the Midpoint program at 12 noon right here on WMNF 88.5 FM. Well, President Trump was in the Panama City area last night. He was doing a campaign rally. This is the area that was devastated by Hurricane Michael just a few months ago. Some people are still living in tents and trailers And the president was there. He promised to bring more aid to the area. Aid has been slow in coming. He also kind of pitted Puerto Rico against the Panama City Beach area, saying that Puerto Rico, which is in a lot of trouble too, still having not recovered from its hurricane more than a year ago, the president is saying that Puerto Rico should get no more aid, and he wants to send aid to Panama, the Panama City Beach area. The president also made some remarks or laughed at a remark about migrants. And this is what the president was saying about migrants and building the wall last night as he was campaigning in Panama City Beach.
They want to fly the flag of Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador right into our border. Save that flag. We love our country. We love our country, but we're afraid of it. For purposes of getting into the United States, we're afraid of our country. And the wall would help because it would not help. The wall would stop it. Okay? The wall would stop it. I mean, when you have 15,000 people marching up and you have hundreds and hundreds of people and you have two or three border security people that are brave and great, and don't forget, we don't let them and we can't let them use weapons. We can't. Other countries do. We can't. I would never do that. But how do you stop these people? You can't. There's no... That's only in the panhandle you can get away with that statement. Only in the panhandle. So it's a tough situation, but if they change the loopholes, we'll have it perfectly. And when the wall is finished, it's going to be great.
President Trump, last night at Panama City Beach, what do you think? He said, how do you stop these people? He was talking about people coming up through the southern border of the U.S., and somebody in the audience shouted, shoot them. And then Trump laughed and said, only in the panhandle can you get away with that. What do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. We were just talking with Bill Knuth of the Gay Men's Chorus of Tampa Bay. David writes this email. He says, I went to New College in Sarasota in the early 1990s, and I always thought it was cool how gay people were open and accepted there, writes David. David says, I'm not gay, but have some gay friends. And he goes on to write, I found the openness at New College very refreshing. Where I grew up in Fort Myers was not very gay friendly. It's still not because it is Trump land, writes David. And Wendell in St. Pete says, I was a young gay teenager in upstate New York in 1969 and agree with your guest about Christopher Street and Greenwich Village. Was it true that gay people were also upset about Judy Garland's funeral procession that happened earlier that same day uptown in New York City? Many gay people were sad on that warm summer day because of Judy's passing. Bill referred to Marilyn Monroe, but I think he was really talking about Judy Garland. That did happen that day. And then... here's somebody anonymously says that there's a good book written by a local author about Stonewall. It's by an author named Rob Sanders. So if you're interested in Stonewall, you might look up his book about Stonewall. It's called Stonewall, A Building, An Uprising, A Revolution by Rob Sanders. So that book, I'm sure, is pretty easy to find if you do a search for it on the Internet. Well, let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. John's in Port Richey, and John's got a comment about President Trump. Hey, John, how are you?
Thanks for the show, Rob. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that his crowd cheered when they said that. They love that kind of talk from him. That's what I think they really like about him, and that he has this tough talk. But I'm just kind of wondering about all of his negotiation skills, because now, what, little rocket man, as he called him, is shooting off rockets again. So how did that negotiation go when he went over there? And Iran is now threatening to rebuild their nuclear weapons program. So I just wonder how his supporters feel about those accomplishments that Trump's made. And something else that I was thinking about, someone made a comment on the yesterday's show about no indictment, no crime. Obviously a Trump supporter. I just kind of wondering, does that mean that there's no crime with Hillary's emails because there is no indictment on anybody associated with it? Does that mean like Hannity's lying then when he says that there's a criminal activity there? What about the conspiracy theory that he puts out about Hillary Clinton and GPS, or Fusion GPS and the Steele dossier? No indictments there, no crime? So when their people are saying that that was a crime, then are they lying when they say that on the media?
Well, that's a good question. All right. Thanks for setting it up for us, John.
Okay.
All right.
I was going to mention the indictments with the investigation that Mueller got. So there were crimes there. Thanks.
Yeah, all right. Thanks a lot. I think we're at just the beginning of the investigation into whether or not there were crimes committed by anybody in the Trump campaign or the Trump administration. I would like to hear from Robert Mueller on the topic of what his report, his 400-some-page report, was meant to tell us. And if you look at the summary, he's pretty tough on Russia, certainly very tough on possible obstruction of justice. There were several occasions which we know that about 400 or 500 prosecutors earlier this week said that with the Mueller report, there was enough information there to bring obstruction of justice charges. I'm not a prosecutor, not an attorney, but when 400 or 500 ex-federal prosecutors come out and say there was enough information in the Mueller report to say that the president could be prosecuted, that gets my attention, I got to say. Again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wimnf.org. To the president's negotiating skills, it always seems that the president comes out with a big pronouncement that he's going to do something. And then when you get down into the weeds, or you wait a few months, or you see what really happens, the initial promise doesn't turn out to be as good or as wide-reaching as the president first announced. Just as I think he was promising that that we would reach some sort of deal with North Korea to shut down their nuclear program. We know that, at least according to a bunch of news reports, repeating what our intelligence agencies say, it looks like North Korea is still proceeding with its nuclear program, nuclear weapons program, and it's not been curtailed at all. The president made some big pronouncements about that, turned out not to be true. During the campaign, the president promised to bring jobs back to the country from places like China. That certainly didn't seem to be panning out at all, yet we don't see any evidence of those jobs coming back. So I think the initial pronouncement is always much more positive than the reality down the road. But what do you think? Here's our number, 813-239-9663. You know, I'm wondering about people who, you know, I think within the Republican Party, there's a lot of people that view themselves as humanitarian or pro-life. And when the president last night jokes about shooting people on the southern border who are trying to immigrate, and laughs at the remark. He says rhetorically, "How do you stop these people?" And somebody shouts out, "Shoot them!" And the president laughs and then makes a joke about it, only in the panhandle. I'm wondering if you're one of those Republicans that is pro-life or pro-human. What do you make about the president's joke last night? And it's not the first time he's made that kind of joke. Bill Grace is our phone producer today, and we're going to try to fix that static problem on line one. If you've got a comment, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Now, here's anonymous writing in the name of Bubba. I don't think that's his real name, but Bubba says, con artists go where the marks are. Sadly, there are a lot of marks in the Florida panhandle. I hope that Trump's paper towel throwing arm was in good shape last night, writes Bubba. You know, if you're a Republican, do you feel like you're a mark? Do you feel like you're being targeted and you're being played as a dupe by President Trump? That's what Bubba says you are. I'd like to know what you think. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Antonio, who's in Sarasota. Hi, Antonio. What would you like to say?
Well, about the Iran thing, about us going after Iran or Trump going after Iran, my question is, do people think that maybe Hillary wouldn't have gone after Iran too?
Well, John Kerry was one of the leaders in making that, negotiating that Iran nuclear agreement. And I think Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, who ran for president in 2004 and lost, I think they have a lot in common. So I think that Kerry probably would have talked her out of it, even if there were some people that wanted to go to war. War should not be the first step; it should be the last step. Now, once negotiations break down,
I know you do.
But I don't think that. My sense is that Kerry would have talked to Clinton, and that Clinton probably would not have gone to war with Iran. What do you think?
I'm saying that I don't think it matters who's in power as far as the president goes. We're going to go wherever the corporations per se want us to go. It doesn't really matter if it's Democrat or Republican, you know, because Obama wasn't an angel himself. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, he deported people too. He signed off on nuclear weapons too. You understand what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, I don't think it's really who the president is. It has to go where the government and who controls it is going.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really have to do with just because it's Trump, that's where we're going to war. I don't think it has to do anything with that.
Hillary Clinton did vote to invade Iraq. All right. Antonio, thanks a lot.
No problem.
Thanks. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. My question still stands, though. One of our emailers just a moment ago emailed in saying that Trump supporters are marks. They're essentially dupes. They're easily misled by President Trump. If you're a President Trump supporter, I'm wondering, how do you feel about that? Do you feel that you're a mark? Do you feel that you're easily duped, that you'd be easily tricked by used car salesmen? 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Tony writes this. He says, Trump's awful laughter in the panhandle just gave us pause. Our nation is in the process of descending slowly, but unfortunately, it's looking more like surely into the abyss of one-party authoritarian corporate capitalist rule. And where's the outrage on the part of the people who say they are too busy to protest? They will wake up and realize we are in an autocracy. Ancient Rome's passage from the original Republic of the Caesars of absolute rule should have been a lesson to those who study history, writes Tony. Let's take some more phone calls, and we're going to go to, let's see, we'll go to Kaylee, who's in Zephyr Hills. Kaylee, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Boy, lots to talk about. You know, I hate to say this, but I do believe from my many experiences of arguing with people before I decided I'm not arguing about Trump with them anymore. The people who support him blindly, they have nothing when I produce actual sources of information. They have nothing. It's just emotionalism. It's just, you know, well, the economy's doing good. And still harping on Clinton. Well, you know, Clinton was impeached. This is just what killed me. Clinton was impeached on the basis of lying about one sexual act and an affair. And compare that to what Trump has done. The last I knew, Politico said they'd caught him in, it was almost 11,000 lies, I believe. Do you know where?
Yeah, I think we're at 10,000, according to the Washington Post, just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, 10,000 something. And, you know, how can people have that bare fact staring them in the face and just still want to defend him? It just blows my mind. And on every level, there's obstructionism. Look at McConnell, how many times he has wheeled and dealed and wrangled beyond what I think is reasonable in a democracy. It's just awful.
Mitch McConnell said the other day that the case is closed about the investigation into any sort of possible wrongdoing by the Trump campaign or by the Trump White House.
Right.
What do you think?
I think it's typical of Mitch McConnell, and I think Trump does the same exact tactic. You know, he's basically like the Wizard of Oz. He's trying to just throw out these ridiculous statements, hoping that his supporters still hang in there with him, playing the victim, you know, when what he's doing is out there just ruining the lives of a lot of people not just in our country, but everywhere. I look, you brought up Puerto Rico earlier. I have a friend who was raised in Puerto Rico. Last night, they did a story on ABC talking about the degree to which children in Puerto Rico are suffering post-traumatic stress and not getting the help for it that they need. They are desperately, showing signs every time the light flicker, anytime there's a loud noise, these kids are just a mess. And the infrastructure is still a mess. My friend is a former Fed who is retired now and worked in Puerto Rico in law enforcement, and he's got friends there that he worked with who are saying there's parts of Puerto Rico that, because of the infrastructure being what it is and the lawlessness and looting and all that, because of desperation, because they had nothing to eat or nothing to, you know, build their little hovel back up that they're trying to live in. There are places that the gangs have just taken over, and the police are just throwing their hands up in the air because it's so dangerous for them. They don't know what to do, and the United States is doing nothing. And they are part of the United States, and that's just a very typical thing. You know, Trump goes to Panama City and says, well, we're going to do this. We're going to bring in this aid, and, you know, Puerto Rico doesn't need this anymore. Well, that's sickening.
All right. Kaylee, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for your comments. Yeah, the president really kind of pitting Panama, the Panama City area and the panhandle against Puerto Rico last night. PolitiFact looked at the president's claim last night that the U.S. has given $91 billion to Puerto Rico and found that not to be true. And you can look up the PolitiFact article. It's just posted on the PolitiFact website this morning. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Among the president's promises, I will always tell you the truth. President promised that during the campaign. He said, we're not going to cut Social Security. We're not going to cut Medicare in the latest budget. He did propose to cut Social Security by $25 billion and Medicaid by $777 billion. The president said that the tax plan will pay for itself. Yet we know that since the tax plan was cut, the federal deficit has increased dramatically, and there are many, many times the president promised things that just simply didn't come through. Let's take some more phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and let's go to Steve in Tampa. Steve, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Yeah, Rob, I would say that that Republicans have been Marx way before Trump came along, and if you think about it, in a way, it is amazing that most of these people are poor, but yet they will be the loudest spokesman for the rich in this country. I mean, they vote against their best interests. They constantly, as long as, you know, the dog whistles are used, you know, abortion, gay marriage, stuff like that, they will allow themselves to basically just be abused and used and lied to just as long as, and so they've been dupes way before Trump came along. Trump's just maybe a little better at it.
But, you know, Republicans would say, look, we're not being taken in. It's you guys who are moderates or liberals or on the left or Democrats. You guys are being taken in. The next caller, I think I'm going to put a Republican on. But, that would be what they would say back to you, Steve.
And I would say to them, I don't know what I would say to them because I don't know how to deal with. It's like I've never been good at dealing with, like, religious fanatics who, when you hit them with logic, they just come back with, well, the Bible teaches us, and I want to scream. So I'll admit, I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't know how to respond to them. I don't know how to respond to people who just blindly, you know, walk into the middle of the street and go, oh, the car won't hit me.
All right, you Steve. Know? Steve, thanks a lot. All thank right, you. Man. I'm glad you called. Let's go to Chuck, who's in Tampa. Chuck, you're on. What would you like to say?
Typical liberal insulting everybody.
All right, who are you talking about?
Your last caller, he would know how to do. First of all, I don't.
All right, so
I don't
Chuck,
have any religious belief.
Chuck, do you feel like you're a mark? You're a Republican. Do you feel like you're a mark?
What,
okay, why aren't you duped?
Why?
Go ahead. A mark is somebody who's easily
mark?
Duped.
Isn't that an old term from Bubba the Love Sponge? I mean, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Okay.
No, I do not feel duped by Donald Trump.
All right. Do you think he's made promises to his supporters that he's not followed through on?
I love what he's doing. He's down there building the wall. Wall's getting built.
Now, how long is the U.S.-Mexico border? How many miles would you say it is?
I think it's about 400 miles of wall they got to build.
No, it's how long is the border? How long is the border?
I couldn't tell you that. I have no idea.
Yeah. It's about 2,200 miles, I think. And how much money do you think he's gotten to build this this giant border wall that he's promised you?
Well, he's working on the areas that need it.
Do you think he's gotten any money for the border wall?
Bought him all the way, so.
And Chuck, do you think he's gotten any money for the border wall?
Yeah, he has gotten money for the wall.
Now, he said that Mexico... Now, Chuck, he said Mexico was going to pay for it. How much money is Mexico given to build this 2,200-mile border wall?
I would say zero.
Yeah, I would say zero, too.
Probably zero. But anyways...
But does that... Did you vote for him based on...
Excuse me, you asked me my opinion.
All right, did you vote for him based on building the wall and having Mexico pay for it?
No, I voted for him because of jobs, the economy... That's what I voted for him for, and he is producing. So,
all right, and
I don't know what more to tell you, people. I mean, you hate Trump so bad, your head's gonna pop off. You know, you're trying.
All right,
Russia investigation. It's like, why don't you guys let it go? Do some policy.
All right, Chuck. Thanks you. I thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, good to hear from you. All right, there's Chuck. Says he's not duped. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Rod in Largo. Rod, you're on. What would you like to say?
Oh, I think that guy was definitely duped. Trump isn't doing anything about jobs. As a matter of fact, a lot of the jobs have gone out. A lot of these corporations like Carrier, Harley-Davidson, General Motors have shut plants down since he's been in. And I don't think the president really has much control over what those corporations do when it comes to whether or not they... close the plants or not.
Well, you know, if you keep wages really low, you can create a lot of jobs.
Well, exactly. You can, and then you have to have two or three of them so you can pay your bills. So, and wages have not gone up. None of the tax. The tax thing is the normal Republican stint all the way back from Reagan with the trickle-down economics that has never worked. But, you know, Jim Jones got people to follow him. Charles Manson got people to follow him. Trump's no different, and I'm not saying that he's a murderer or anything like that, but I think people, I wouldn't say so much that they were, that the Trump supporters are duped so much as they hate what's been going on with the regular politicians in this country for so many years, you know, which most of them work for the corporations. They don't work for the good of you and I. And they got so sick and tired of it, they thought somebody like Trump would be better. I mean, and, you know, remember Ross Perot ran back in the day, too, but he was a real businessman. He wasn't a charlatan or, you know, like Trump is and all like that.
Because he truly was self-made. He didn't inherit $400 or $500 million dollars from his dad. Although I think he did inherit some money, but not nearly at the level that Trump inherited.
Well, and he didn't run six businesses into the ground and all the rest of it. He actually was a businessman, and a true businessman. And these people, I think they're duped in as much as they think Trump is a businessman and a whiz with numbers and money, and he's the furthest thing from it. I mean, just with his taxes and all the rest of the stuff that he hides. If he was so great at this and what he was and a deal maker, I mean, I wouldn't even call him a deal maker. The guy's an extortionist, blackmailer. That's how he does his deals. You know, you either do this or I'm going to do this. And that isn't how you make deal. That isn't how you put your hand out and say, let's compromise, let's see how we can work this out. The guy's the furthest thing from it, but I think his supporters just think because he goes in there and is being very destructive and tearing everything up, great, because he's just not one of those politicians.
Yeah, you know, it seems like when he made a deal, at least in business, it was only one-sided, that the deal would benefit him but not the other side. I think a good deal maker, a deal would benefit both sides. Both sides would win something. But he doesn't, at least reading about his business history, I don't get the sense that he wanted the other side to win. I think he wanted to be the winner take all when he made a deal.
Yeah, and in most of his bankruptcies that he did, he even said that, I think, in Art of the Dealer, it was in an article that I read, that he bragged about, you know, I went in and it's just like, if you hired this company to come in for $20 million to build this stuff, and then when it was all said and done, you went and filed bankruptcy and said, okay, I'm going to give you $5 million or you get nothing. How is that a good negotiation? That's just screwing people outright.
That's an easy thing to do. It's harder to make a deal where both sides win. All right, yeah. Rod, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Lou in Tampa writes this email. A lot of emails have come in. Lou in Tampa writes this. Due to Stonewall, I grew up with more awareness of LGBT issues and acceptance. By the way, the Marks never realize they are Marks until it is too late, writes Lou in Tampa. Rose is listening online. She says, I believe those folks who still support Trump are now so entrenched in their belief system that they are not capable of rationally looking at the facts. It would shatter their self-image, narrative, and identity. They feel so beleaguered by those of us who have been saying that this election was so wrong, corrupt, and stupid that they're not able to back down. I don't know how we can help these folks back down and still save face. That's one perspective. Writing from Germany, writes Rose. And we've got so many emails here. I wish I could read them all. Let me go to Terry's email real quickly, and then we'll go back to the phones. Terry says this, sitting president can't be indicted. What if, I ask this seriously, what if he killed his wife, for example? Would he not be charged with a crime, indicted, and imprisoned? What would happen, writes Terry. I don't know, Terry. Let's hope that at the very least, the cabinet would stand up and invoke that constitutional amendment that allows the cabinet to temporarily remove the president. Let's go to John in Palmetto. John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. First, I'd like to say that one reason that Trump is not throwing a bone to Puerto Rico is because they are sort of just smothered in debt, and it's from IMF debt, International Monetary Fund debt, from all, you know, that it's a couple of the vultures, capitalists, that have backed Trump and his campaign to be elected. They have bought up much of that debt. If they come in and rescue it, that money cannot go to them. And you know what I mean? It's so complicated, it just gets thrown in a twister. And if he can keep them off of it, then these people can try and wring it out. Now, I do want to mention the gentleman that called that said he was still in support. I mean, it was Mark Twain who said it's easier to dupe someone than to convince them they've been duped. You know, his first thing he mentioned was the wall. Yet he didn't. What he said, 400 and some miles.
Yeah, he had no idea how long the border was. Yeah,
and everything you asked him, you couldn't name one thing that he would go with. Well, I think that Vegas needs to pick up a political wing where people can start putting their money where their mouth is, and Vegas can get a good part of the action. So just to shut some of these people up. But everything that gentleman did is a textbook definition of duped. You know, so he just doesn't know. He couldn't tell you if he had to, but he's going to stick with it. But it's not glue he put on. He just hit flypaper. He can't get off, you know? So anyway, thanks.
All right, John, thanks a lot. You know, the thing about the wall is that I think the president got a few dollars to build a very short section of this giant wall that he has been promising. At one point during the campaign, I think he said 20 feet high or 30 feet high. Well, if you were to take all the 2,200 miles or so of border and replace the fence and the lower walls there with this giant wall that the president wants, it would cost you hundreds of billions of dollars. There's probably not enough domestic workers in the U.S. that could build that wall. The president also promised that Mexico would pay for it. Now, he's made this promise. I think a lot of people still believe he's going to build it. It's not going to happen. There is not going to be this giant wall across the southern border. The president and his party are not going to be willing to borrow that much money, and they can't find the workers to build it. So that's just one example, and Mexico is not going to pay for it. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for the Midpoint program. They'll be talking about DNA and genealogy. I'm Rob Lori. This is WMNF in Tampa.